This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In places like Afghanistan and Yemen, the U.S. military has increasingly made use of unmanned aircraft carrying cameras and weapons. But as this technology becomes cheaper, police departments in this country are also considering the use of drones for routine aerial surveillance. In fact, this kind of technology is becoming so accessible that anyone could take advantage of it. And all of this raises questions about the potential erosion of the right to privacy. In this part of Focus, we will be exploring the issue with Catherine Crump. She is an attorney, and she works with the American Civil Liberties Union. She is particularly interested in these kinds of issues, privacy and technology. She's also a non-resident fellow at the Stanford Center for Internet and Technology, and she is the co-author of a report that was published by the ACLU, put out last December, taking a look at this very question. The topic of the report, Protecting Privacy from Aerial Surveillance, Recommendations for Government Use of Drone Aircraft. And I'm sure that you can read it by going to the website of the ACLU, where you'll find all kinds of information on civil liberties unions, civil liberties issues. And certainly, as we talk in this part of the program, questions are welcome. You can call in, make comments, ask questions. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. The toll-free line, if it would be a long-distance call for you, is 800-222-9455. And we do have email, so if you would like to send along a question or a comment that way, you certainly can do that. And the address is willtalk@illinois.edu. So at any point, your questions are certainly welcome. And Catherine Crump, hello.
Hello.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. Well, and I think this is a really fascinating subject. And I think that, for some time now, we have been hearing about the use of drones by the military outside of the United States. And there has been some debate about the issues connected with that. But I think now, just relatively recently now, we have started to hear more and more about how quickly this technology is developing, how it is becoming quite affordable, and it's either up for consideration or perhaps also already has some domestic applications. And even to take that a step further, there is this very real possibility that if I wanted to, I could have my own surveillance drone, and if I wanted to know what my neighbor was doing in his backyard, I could fly it over his backyard and I could see. I think it's the legal and cultural questions here, I think, are really fascinating. And it seems that they've come on us fairly quickly.
That's right. I think Americans are just adjusting to the reality that drones may soon become a common feature of the U.S. airspace. We've thought about drones primarily in the context of places far away. We've thought about Afghanistan. We've thought about Yemen. And in those cases, the use of drones is primarily by the U.S. military. But I don't think people have really focused yet on the issue of drones coming to the U.S. and what that's going to mean for our privacy in particular.
Yeah. I think that at least so far, it seems that some of the discussion here has to do with air safety issues. So, for example, it involves the Federal Aviation Administration, because you don't want a drone to get in the way of a commercial airplane. So that's part of it, and the FAA certainly has a regulatory role. But at the same time, and perhaps that would be the issues that you'd be maybe even more interested in, there are these issues that have to do with privacy, with the Fourth Amendment, and the increase in this increasing ability now for someone, whether government or some private citizen, to be looking over our shoulders.
I think drones raise a whole host of fascinating and complicated issues. The FAA has been concerned about the safety of drones for a long time. As you mentioned, they don't want drones in the airspace crashing into planes. And they're also concerned about drones falling out of the sky and potentially hurting someone or causing property damage down below.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the FAA has really primarily been looking at. And the reason that there aren't drones around all the time today is largely because of the FAA. So far, they've largely stopped drones from being deployed domestically because of these safety concerns. But there are also other issues, and they're fascinating and complicated ones dealing with privacy, particularly, I think, from the use of drones by law enforcement, but also free speech, because to what extent can drones be used to gather the news? And I think as drones do come to America, and I think that's a very likely outcome, we're really going to need to grapple with these questions.
Yeah. Well, that gets us in, and I'm sure we'll talk some more about that in detail, but just to mention it, I think it gets us into this very interesting area that, again, we're talking about more and more, I think, that has to do with what expectation of privacy should people have when they're out in public, which would include not only walking down the street, but also would be include, say, sitting in their backyard.
That's a really interesting question and a complicated one. And actually, the Supreme Court recently grappled with this question. The court decided a case recently called United States versus Jones, and the question in that case was, can you attach a GPS device to someone's car, can the police attach a GPS device to someone's car, and track it as it moves through public spaces? And in that case, the court said that that implicates the Fourth Amendment, that doing that is a search and has to be evaluated for reasonableness. So, it is clear that just because you're out in public doesn't mean you forfeited all of your privacy rights, particularly in your movements over a long period of time from place to place. But how that's going to apply to the range of new technologies that are available today, from GPS to tracking the location of people's cell phones to drones, is a question that the courts and I think us as a society are really going to have to grapple with over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. Well, I think it also increasingly people are aware of the fact that when they're moving around out in public, they're being watched. There are increasing numbers of surveillance cameras that watch what people do, and I think that people are still surprised about this, that don't realize to the extent that exists, and that there is this potential where you're out. Maybe you think about that if you're in the bank, because or in a store, but just walking down the street, who knows how many cameras there are that are watching you? And this, it just takes that having a mobile camera that could actually be following you. Just seems to take that up several levels.
I think the idea of pervasive surveillance really messes with people's privacy intuition. Most of us, if we're walking around, just imagine the pre-digital, pre-camera world. If you used to be walking down the street, if you didn't do something unusual or you weren't standing out in some way, really no one would notice you. So, you might have, maybe technically someone could follow you wherever you went, but you did have a sense of privacy in public spaces. And it goes along with that in the pre-digital age, if someone wanted to track your movements, they'd pretty much have to follow you. And it's hard to do that to someone for a long period of time without revealing your presence. But what's happened is over the last 20 years, all sorts of surveillance technologies have crept into our public spaces. Cameras are the most common ones, but really more recently than that, these cameras are becoming more powerful. So for instance, you used to have a series of discrete surveillance cameras. Now, increasingly, they're being networked together, so they're more powerful in being able to track people's movements. The development of facial recognition technology may eventually make it possible to be able to identify specific people in footage. Right now, that's very difficult. And I think drones are a big piece of this, too, because if there are drones that are able to be these omnipresent features of the sky and surveil a large area, they too will be able to engage in tracking.
Mm-hmm. And I think that here, I think also people are, as there's been more reporting on this, people are starting to realize just how small some of these things are. I think if maybe people are used to seeing photographs of the things that have been used militarily, which can be a pretty good-sized thing, particularly those things that are capable of firing a missile. But if you just all you're doing is carrying a camera, the device to do that can actually be pretty small.
That's right. The drones vary dramatically in size, and they're actually getting smaller all the time. You know, the drones that drop bombs on people in overseas are actually quite large, the size of large airplanes. Mm. But drones can be pretty much any size. There's actually one that was developed at the behest of the Defense Department that is essentially a replica of a hummingbird. It's very tiny, and it can hover. And so it's, you know, it could, for instance, hover by someone's the window of their house and film in that area. The drones that law enforcement agencies are primarily interested in today are somewhere in between these two extremes. You know, they're the size of sort of smaller airplane, maybe a 10 or 14 foot wingspan. So the FAA has anticipated, I think correctly, that most of the drones that will be deployed first in the U.S. airspace will be less than 50 pounds.
Let me just introduce very quickly the guest for this part of Focus. We're talking with Catherine Crump. She is a staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, and she's involved with their Speech Privacy and Technology Project. She's also a non-resident fellow at the Stanford Center for Internet and Society and is the co-author of a report looking at some of the privacy issues involved in this aerial surveillance technology that we're talking about. It was put out by the ACLU in December. And if you go to their website, I'm sure you can read it. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, to what extent has aerial surveillance, that is with helicopters or airplanes or something like that, where there were people in them, to what extent has that been used to date? And did that raise any of these same issues?
Of surveillance has been used in a fairly limited capacity. And so, for instance, you know, many of us are aware that if there's an urban area and someone is a fleeing felon, on occasion the police will fly a helicopter to try to identify, you know, where that person is running and where they are going. But there were really sort of natural limits in place on how much that form of technology could be used. Helicopters are extremely expensive to purchase, and because of fuel and operational costs, they're also extremely expensive to use. And so it was only a limited number of police departments that could even afford helicopters. So drones really stand to change that equation. Drones can be quite affordable, less than $50,000. That would be a lot of money for an individual, but fits well within the budget of a relatively small police department. And actually, there are drones available for private hobbyist use on the internet that you can purchase for less than $400. So I think some people say, well, what's different about drones and helicopters? And I think one of the primary differences is cost, and the fact that drones are going to be far less expensive, I think, raises a possibility that there will be aerial surveillance in the United States to an extent that we have never previously seen.
Yeah, and so what we are talking about the potential to observe people and not only what they're doing, but actually know who they are, and to do this under a variety of conditions, even at night.
That's true. Some of this is here now, and some of it will be, I think, with us relatively soon. Drones may or may not be armed, and I actually think that the use of force in the U.S. by drones is another topic that's interesting and worth discussing. But all drones have cameras attached to them, and those cameras can be really powerful. They can see things that aren't detectable by the naked eye. They can zoom in to great levels of magnitude. They can be equipped with thermal imaging technology so that they can see in the dark. There are even developments on the horizon that would allow these cameras to look through opaque surfaces. So, for instance, if someone is in the forest, normally your vision would be obscured by trees, but you could potentially penetrate through that. And even folks are experimenting with technologies that would make it possible to look through walls. And so I think that drones will often have very powerful cameras on them. There's another issue with drones, which is how long they can engage in surveillance. And They're becoming smaller and lighter and more fuel efficient all the time. So while many drones today can only be in the air for relatively short periods of time, one can imagine drones that could stay up for much longer, and actually the government is actively sponsoring research to be able to do that.
Yeah, that gets us into a hole. That's we're talking about two levels here. It's one thing to you say that you have a fleeing suspect and you send out a drone specifically to try to follow and catch that person. Or maybe you're there's someone who's lost. You know, the thing that I'm sure that some police departments will say as well, you know, imagine that we have someone who is not well and they've wandered away from their home, or they've wandered away from a hospital, or they're out in the middle of the wilderness. We can't send enough people out to find them, but by using these devices, we might actually find them and save their life. Well, that's sort of a dedicated short-term mission. There's a lot of difference, though, between that and the idea that, well, what we're going to just do is we're going to have a fleet of drones and they're going to do routine patrols, and we can send them out and they can be out for hours at a time just flying around just randomly or assigned to a particular territory just to see what we can see without any particular idea that we're going after some person, but that they're just there to see what might be going on.
I think it is worth clarifying that the ACLU is not opposed to the use of drones categorically. There are many legitimate and valuable uses of drones, including the ones you've just described. Another one might be, for example, if there is a forest fire, it is dangerous to send manned aircraft in some circumstances in order to observe the scope and extent of that fire, but one could potentially use a drone. And those are perfectly legitimate, non-objectionable uses of drones. I think that the real question is, to what extent are drones going to become a tool for pervasive surveillance? Are they simply going to be eyes in the sky that are available to look around, not because the police have any particular reason to think that there's wrongdoing going on, but simply to engage in more generalized monitoring? And I don't think that's a far-fetched scenario. I know this is a small example, but actually the police in Provo, Utah, were at a time interested in having a surveillance blimp over Provo. Blimps can stay in the air for a long time. Their idea is this thing could just hover over Provo and there would be a camera attached to it. And when questioned about why this was of interest, the spokesperson for the police department said, well, I'm paraphrasing, I should hasten to add, but the general idea was, well, we simply think people will behave better if they're being watched. I think innocent Americans should be able to travel the streets without worrying that any curious police officer is going to be training a camera on them. I think that's a serious impact on people's privacy and really affect people's actions and can make people feel obligated to act in a conformist way where they wouldn't otherwise be inclined to do so. I think that's a big loss to people, and I don't actually think I don't think it benefits law enforcement legitimate needs to do that. So that's the real fear that we would like to avoid.
I'm sure that the example of the blimp, some people might find that silly, although it presents all sorts of great features for you to talk about. I would think that, for example, with that, some people, if you were making the argument, trying to make the argument on the blimp side of things, you might say, well, you can't hide a blimp. I mean, everyone would know that it was there. So then you would take that into account, and really they might say, well, really, what's the difference between that and a police officer cruising around in a marked car? Because you can see them, they're not hiding. Well, you can see the blimp, it's there. So is that truly an invasion of privacy if it's such a public kind of, if it has such a public presence?
Yes, I think the blimp example would be an invasion of privacy. Even if you can see the blimp, you don't necessarily know that it's focusing on you. The blimp is kind of a silly example, but it illustrates a broader range of technologies, which is one of the questions about drones. I mean, there are going to be many different types of drones, but one type of drone under development is extremely light and flies at a very, very high altitude and can stay up for long periods of time. Those drones may end up being so high that they're not actually visible to the human eye. And in that case, I think you have both the danger that the blimp poses of generalized surveillance. No one ever knows when they're under the scrutiny of the state, and the problem that you don't even know that, that there's anyone there potentially observing you in the first place.
Mm. And maybe also here now we should mention, you know, we've talked about some hypotheticals, but that it is the case that drones have already been used. So it's not something that is sheerly a matter of this could happen someday. It, in fact, has happened already.
Some police departments in the U.S. have purchased drones. It's not many have because of the obstacles that the FAA's safety concerns have put in the way of that. Mm-hmm. But some have done it and have gone on record saying how useful they think this technology would be. So, for example, the police department in Mesa County, Colorado, which is a relatively rural county, got permission to operate a drone. The Miami police got permission to test the drone. Police in Houston, Texas, carried out a test of a drone. It was intended to be a secret test, but then the reporters, got wind of the fact that it was happening, and then the police spokesman was asked whether it was possible that the drone would eventually be used to issue traffic tickets, answered yes, and that kind of killed the program because the public outrage was so high. But there's definite interest. And when we wrote this report back in December, it's amazing how much your perspective on things can change in even just a few months. I was really primarily concerned about the privacy aspects, and I thought it was almost far-fetched that law enforcement agencies in the U.S. would want to arm their drones with non-lethal force. But I'm actually, I think that instinct of mine was wrong, and I think that's also another primary concern here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's even more interesting, troubling, shocking. I don't know what kind of words you want to put on it. So it is the case that people are thinking about not only using these for surveillance purposes, but putting guns or tasers, or I'm not sure what viable option there would be to mounting some kind of a device like that on a drone. What are people thinking about?
Well, I haven't heard of anyone in the U.S. suggest that lethal forms of force should be attached to drones. Mm-hmm. But there's one police department in Texas, for example, and I can't remember the name of the town, unfortunately, that has purchased a drone that is weapons capable. And that drone, I believe, could shoot tasers at people who are located on the ground.
Mm.
And I recently heard a police chief talk about this technology, and my instinct had been that folks wouldn't be interested in that because it just seemed beyond the pale to have an unmanned aircraft, using force against people on the ground. And the police chief's view was very different. I mean, his view was essentially, anything to keep our officers safe. If they have to deal with a volatile crowd, and we can simply tase those people without actually having to have any officers present, that maximizes the safety of the officers. My view is, of course, different from that. And everyone wants officers to stay safe, but I worry that someone operating a drone from far away won't have the same type of contextual information as someone who's present on the scene, won't be there, won't have the same view of what's happening, and may use force where someone on the ground would exercise restraint. So I think that's actually a particularly scary potential use of drone technology.
Mm-hmm. You can imagine taking it even further. We have people who are operating drones that operate where the drones are outside of the United States, but they're here, so they're a long way away. I suppose you could imagine this being outsourced and have a drone operating in Phoenix, and the person operating the drone being in New York. And even further away from the situation that they're monitoring.
I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be technologically possible, no. I mean, it's a networked world these days.
Our guest in this part of Focus, again, is Catherine Crump. She is a staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, and we're talking about some of the particularly privacy issues involved in the increasing interest in and use of drones, non-unmanned aircraft, by police departments here in the United States. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think we have a caller here. Why don't we go ahead and bring them into the conversation in Effingham on our toll-free line. Hello.
Thank you again. popped into my mind about photography and how that can be manipulated to put false evidence in whatever would appear in court. And unbeknownst to defense or protective sources that would be able to reveal that. And a photograph, you know, has been manipulated since it has been invented. And to keep your privacy intact, you know, the more photographs there are, the ability to take them and to use them, then diminishes all of us as a organized species and civilized grouping. So I wonder if your guest might address that and how those things have been and will always be and no doubt nuanced into the future. Thank you.
All right. Well, I think that is, again, an interesting question about the use of images that would come from a drone as evidence in a criminal prosecution.
Yeah. I don't have any particular expertise on photographs and the ways in which they can be manipulated. So I just don't feel well-placed to speak to that. But I don't think there's any question that drone and the images gathered by drones could potentially be used as evidence in a criminal case. One of the things we haven't talked about yet is I think one of the big questions is how it's not just whether drones will be present in the U.S., but how they will be configured, right? Mm-hmm. Will they record all of the time whenever they're flying? And to what extent those images will be saved? Will they be saved forever? Will they be saved only where law enforcement has a good reason to believe that the images are evidence of a crime? Who will be able to access those images? I think those practical implementation questions will also have a big impact on how privacy invasive drones turn out to be.
We will talk in some greater detail and some more in a moment here. We're just about midway through this point in our conversation of focus, talking with Catherine Crump from the ACLU. We're talking about some of the privacy issues raised by the use of drone aircraft here in the United States. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, Paul McCartney talks with us from his home studio in England.
I happen to have a piano beside me here. It's like, besame, besame mucho.
And we hear recordings from his new collection of songs from his father's generation. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Programs on WILL are made possible by the Illinois Professional Science Master's programs on the Urbana-Champaign campus, offering graduate degrees that combine science and business, including the program in plant biology. More information is available at 217-265-5363 or on the web at psm.illinois.edu.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. You can check our schedule by going to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. There you will see that tomorrow in this hour of the show, our guest will be Charles Duhigg. He's an award-winning investigative reporter with the New York Times. We'll talk about his recent book, The Power of Habit. The subtitle is Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business. Also, I want to mention that next week, Monday morning at 10 o'clock, we'll start off the week talking about Afghanistan. And there our guest is Lucy Edwards. She's former political advisor to the EU ambassador in Kabul, Afghanistan. She's a writer, has spent a lot of time in the country, and we'll be talking about a book that she's authored that's titled The Afghan Solution, the inside story of Abdul Haq, the CIA, and how Western hubris lost Afghanistan. And we'll have a lot of other things coming up in the next week and the weeks ahead. You can, again, as I say, check the schedule or listen to past programs by going to will.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media. In this hour of Focus, we are talking about drones and the possibility, increasing possibility, because they're becoming so much more affordable, that police departments will be using them here in the United States. We've heard a lot about their use elsewhere, outside of the country, by the military. This is a different kind of thing, and it raises a lot of interesting questions about privacy. And our guest in this hour is Catherine Crump. She is a staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union. She works with their Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. She's also a non-resident fellow at the Stanford Center for Internet and Society. She is the co-author of a report, Protecting Privacy from Aerial Surveillance, Recommendations for Government Use of Drone Aircraft, that was put out by the ACLU last December. And I'm sure if you go to their website, you can read that and other things that they're interested in. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, Ed, as we've mentioned here, at least so far, it seems that the major sort of governmental body that's interested in regulation of drone use has been the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, and not surprising because they're concerned with air safety and who's in the sky when, and they want to make sure that we don't have problems. So they're interested in trying to place some restrictions and regulations on the use of drones, while at the same time it seems that there are a lot of people want the FAA to back off and to make it, you know, to loosen the rules to make it possible for drones to be used. What's happening in that sphere?
There has actually been a ton of activity on this issue over the last few months. The FAA, as you mentioned, originally was really, you know, dampening the speed at which drones were being adopted in the U.S. However, all of that is about to change. Actually, not that long ago, Congress stepped into the field and passed new legislation requiring the FAA to integrate drones into the national airspace by 2015. Now, it's unclear what that will, practically speaking, end up meaning, but I do think it means that we have a lot of decisions to make over the next 3 years about how and to what extent drones will become part of the national airspace and what privacy protections are going to be put in place.
Well, we have another caller here to bring into the conversation. Let's do that. And they're on our line number one. Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to mention that I was driving in Indiana on not on a superhighway, but another state highway, and a drone came up behind me. It apparently was just watching the traffic or something and came up behind me and then went straight on down the road I was going on. And I just maybe thought people might be interested in a state nearby that seems to be doing it. I don't know if the guest has heard about Indiana having them or not.
Well, tell us some more about what the experience was like. What was that disconcerting for you as you were driving along?
It was kind of creepy, yeah. Yeah, they weren't too high above, you know, and they just were going right straight down the road and over me and then in front of me. So they were traveling faster, maybe 60 or 70 miles an hour or something.
Have you, Catherine, heard stories like that, of that kind of use?
You know, I actually haven't. And that doesn't, it may just be that I haven't run across that yet. Drones, you know, as I've mentioned, are sort of in limited use. They are used from time to time, but that's a very interesting story because it's one of the first examples I've heard of drones, you know, being used in a way that's visible and apparent to people. By the way, I should mention that one thing we haven't talked about is the use of drones by the federal government. We've known for a long time that drones have been used by Customs and Border Protection and others, but what we didn't know until this past December was sometimes those agencies lend their drones out to local law enforcement agencies to help with sort of routine law enforcement investigations. So, for example, there was a police department in North Dakota that was doing an operation, and they were able to call on Customs and Border Protection to fly its drones over the side of the operation and identify where some people were located and even to tell whether those individuals were armed. So I just bring that up now because drones are, just to illustrate that drones are being used in the U.S. in ways that we don't totally understand, and so it's interesting to hear about these particular types of stories. The other thing that we've heard of comes from upstate New York, and there is a military base where drones are operated, and those drones, people who are getting trained on those drones, needs to be able to use them. And one of the things that they've been known to do would be to lock on to passenger cars and then to follow one individual car for a long period of time in order to protect that, to practice that tracking technique. So there are examples of this happening, but it's interesting to hear a firsthand account because we don't hear about them very often.
Right. Well, thanks for calling and telling us the story.
I'm glad you had the program.
All right.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a couple of questions here that have come in by email. Someone here is writing, although it's, as we have discussed, the cost of the drones themselves may be coming down. The person here wonders, well, what about the cost of the operator? Are there any estimates as to what the costs of such law enforcement program might be? Because they think, well, it sounds like it could be expensive to train the operator. And further, there's a question about what kind of certification might be required of the operator to ensure public safety.
The cost question is interesting. I haven't seen any cost estimates of how much it does cost to train someone like that. I know that there are private companies who sell the drones and then provide training. One of the common fact patterns that I've seen is usually they're sort of existing police departments police officers within a department, and they're the ones who receive the training to operate the drones. In terms of the certification requirements, I haven't really heard of any of those existing, but hopefully that's one of the things that the FAA will be insisting upon or looking into when people want to fly drones. But it's actually a broader problem than that. Right now, there aren't certification requirements, and individuals, as I mentioned, can simply purchase drones on the Internet. Those drones are actually quite small, and so the potential for them causing anyone harm is probably limited, although I don't know that I'd want anything, stalling out and dropping on a person from even 20 or 30 feet up.
Yeah.
But I think there's just a whole host of safety issues that present themselves, not just with police officers operating drones, but with anyone with a credit card being able to purchase this technology and use it.
All right. Here, another question that has come in by email. The person writes, what are the chances that European Union-style privacy laws would be enacted in the U.S.? Google's Street View efforts in Europe have run into stringent laws with real penalties and consequences. In the U.S., these laws seem to be lacking, and we're forced to rely on more complicated remedies such as the Fourth Amendment. And the person goes on to write, in their admittedly limited understanding of the Fourth Amendment, it would not seem to have much scope in the private sector.
Well, the latter part is certainly correct. The Fourth Amendment protects us from government invasions of our privacy only. So, for example, if you if a police officer comes into your house and searches it without a warrant based on probable cause, you can bring a Fourth Amendment claim against them. You wouldn't have one if a private citizen did that, although, of course, you'd have some sort of trespass claim against them. When it comes to the question about the European Union, the Europeans have a totally different approach to privacy than the United States. And one of the things that I think is so fantastic about their system is many countries have what is called a privacy commissioner. It's a very high-level government official whose job is to look at the impact that government programs are having on people's privacy, as well as private companies as well, and to be there as a presence to try to make sure that people's privacy rights aren't needlessly violated. We don't have that kind of structure in the U.S., and we also don't have the type of comprehensive privacy laws that are common in Europe. And the net effect is we have sort of a patchwork of laws that's usually fairly reactive, right? So, for example, there was a case where someone who was going through the Supreme Court confirmation process had his video rental records obtained, and Congress was outraged about that and passed the Video Privacy Protection Act, which protected video rental records, right? And that was good, but it's not the type of comprehensive regulation that could really anticipate future developments. Most of us haven't rented a VHS cassette tape since maybe the early 90s. And so, what are the odds of us getting a more comprehensive regulatory scheme? I think that really depends on how important this issue is to the public over the next few years and what kind of response we can generate to encourage Congress to set up a more comprehensive scheme.
Yeah. Well, I'm just I'm still kind of thinking we have talked quite a lot about questions raised by the use of drones by governments. And now we're getting into the area of private interests, maybe private business. But I guess I'm still also thinking about private individuals. And I'm here. I've just did a little quick Google search for drones for sale. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, I can go to Amazon and I could buy one, something called a Parrot AR drone quadricopter, $300. And I'm sure that there are others that seem to be sort of in that. Here somebody is selling one for only $270. So I guess I'm thinking. So what if I am that nosy person that I just want to know what everybody else is doing on my block? And so I get my drone and I start flying it around and peeking into people's backyards and doing whatever else I can for those people who feel that I as their neighbor are invading their privacy. What sort of remedy do they have?
I think there are limited remedies today. And, you know, I should also mention that we have a First Amendment right to free speech. People have the right to videotape things that are happening in public. And so when a private individual flies a drone and the government seeks to regulate that, there are going to be First Amendment free speech issues that come up. We currently do have regulations which aim to prevent excessive snooping. I think to the extent people are using drones, for example, to peer into other people's windows or to follow one individual around wherever they go for long periods of time, at a certain point, those may implicate existing anti-stalking provisions or other privacy laws that are on the books. But drones are so new, and this just raises all sorts of hypothetical examples that just haven't been encountered before, that I think it's just going to take us a while to figure out, how do we strike that balance between protecting people's legitimate free speech interests and also preserving their privacy?
Mm-hmm. Well, rightly, we're talking here about government using drones to snoop on us. But I'm thinking about the fact that here, for example, in our state, there has been a lot of debate about whether or not citizens have the right to record police officers in the course of doing their duty. So one could imagine concerns here being about government snooping on us, that government might be worried about us snooping on them. Would there then suddenly the government have to be thinking about how they're going to regulate the use of drones by private citizens, not to snoop on each other, but to snoop on the agents of government when they're doing their business?
There really shouldn't be a question about whether individuals have the right to videotape, for example, the police executing their duties in a public place. The answer to that really ought to be yes. There's a strong public interest in understanding how law enforcement agencies are executing their duties, and that right ought to be in place, whether or not individuals are filming the police using a cell phone camera or traditional camera, or whether or not they're flying a drone. I think drones have potentially powerful and important uses. So, for example, we all know about the Occupy movements that have been springing up around the country. One individual associated with that, an individual named Tim Pool, built something he called the Occucopter, which is a helicopter he flies at these protests for the purposes of filming interactions between citizens and the police. And his philosophy is that those engaged in what is totally constitutionally protected protest activity will be better off if they have their own objective evidence of what interactions between them and the police were like. So I do think there's serious and useful free speech uses for these. And my biggest fear, by the way, is actually that only the government will be allowed to use this technology. I think that's the worst possible outcome. If the government comes up with a reason to regulate these so that private citizens can't access them, but then itself uses them for surveillance, I think that will continue to tilt the balance of power between the people and the government in the government's favor in ways that I just think are unhealthy in what should be, a democracy.
Yeah. Well, we have some other callers here. Let's go to someone in our area here in Champaign. Line number two. Hello.
Hi, David. Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Okay. Two things, actually. You were talking a few minutes ago about the number of people needed to operate drones. And I want to say that since the start of the new year, there's been at least one article about that in the New York Times. And if I remember correctly, the gist the article was that it actually takes more people to operate drones than it does to fly planes, which surprises me. But I guess a lot of that has to do with analyzing all the videotape that the drones are producing. Second thing is, I don't know if how many people have been following the Prickly City comic strip this week. It's locally, you can get it in the Chicago Tribune. The News Gazette doesn't carry it. Prickly City, for the last several weeks, has been doing a riff on the presidential campaigns and some of the craziness that comes out in the primaries. This week, they brought in a character. He's a little like Beetle from Guam, and he's supposed to be a political advisor to the candidate. And this week, they've had drones in the comic strip chasing this little Beetle character. And the strip last night was the drone announced that it was going to bomb the little Beetle character and was telling all the other characters in the comic strip to step out of the way. And the other characters are protesting, well, he's from America, he's got rights. And the drone is saying, well, I have the right to kill him, so please take off your shoes and step away from the Beetle.
Well, it's an interesting example of how something like a comic strip that we think of as being as lighthearted takes on serious issues.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also true that what you suggest is that the New York, I'm sure that a lot of has been coverage of these issues, but I think that particularly the Times has done some interesting stuff on it.
Yeah.
So if people are interested in reading and they do have internet access, they can just do a search on their site and they will see some interesting articles. Yeah. Well, I thank you for the comment.
Well, thank you so much.
I think I'll just go on to another person here. This is Paris next, line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I just had a question about federal government drones as border protection and their legality in their use. Anyhow, that's kind of the question I had, so I'll just hang up and listen from there.
Yeah, can you talk some more about how they, because they have been used in this way.
Yes. So Congress actually authorized Customs and Border Protection to purchase drones in order to patrol the border, and it did so because drones can be useful in spotting people and contraband coming across the border. The new development here is that the drones aren't just being used for border protection. It turns out that they're also being lent to local police departments so that, to help those departments also engage in surveillance in more routine law enforcement investigations. No one knew that was going on for a long time until this past December when the LA Times published an article about this, and after that happened, several of the lawmakers in Congress who had been involved in approving the use of drones at the border expressed real dismay because they did not intend for these drones to become generalized surveillance tools used on the American people. They intended them to be used for, you know, the narrow purpose of patrolling the borders, and nowhere, did they authorize drones to be used for a broader purpose. But I think this illustrates how technology that's purchased for one purpose can then be used in ways that no one anticipated at the outset.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll try to get at least one more call here. We have a couple of minutes left. We'll go to Champaign, line 1. Hello.
Yes. I just wanted to clear up one thing. Your discussion about the purchase of drones that are available publicly. I think it's interesting the way that the use of the word drone now that's come from the use of the term militarily overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan. Mostly we're talking about basically what we used to call remote control helicopters. Wouldn't you agree?
I think yes. I think that's right.
Okay. My understanding is most of what you buy is available commercially does not have cameras available. Is that your understanding?
To be perfectly honest with you, I have not looked that closely at
it. Okay. I have some familiarity. I have one small, it weighs about 2 ounces, I think, maybe 4 ounces. It's about 4 inches long, remote control helicopter that I'm not very good at using. And it certainly doesn't have any kind of recording devices installed. I've seen their videos on YouTube where people have customized their devices to allow them to mostly in the one case I saw, it was one where somebody in Germany had customized his so he could fly it remotely as sort of a, it was a hobby thing where he actually flew it over mountains and things and allowed him to fly it in all sorts of wilderness areas. It was and create videos. But generally, I can't say it doesn't exist, but I don't believe the commercially available helicopters actually have recording devices installed on them.
Well, I'm thinking of the hypothetical, like where maybe not necessarily where the technology is now, but mm-hmm. where the technology could go, and how it's always good to raise questions about it before you actually get to that point. And maybe we're real short on time here, Catherine. I don't know. Maybe you can provide a little bit more of an answer.
Yeah, so you can actually currently purchase drones with cameras available on the Internet. For example, I purchased one that's about 4 inches long that has a camera for about $60 used on eBay. So they are available. Mine's not very sophisticated. You can't actually look at the footage while it's flying. You have to download it later. But I do believe that for, you know, a few $100, you can get one that's far more sophisticated.
Mm. Well, we're at the point where I appreciate the last caller's comments. We're going to have to stop, and I guess this is just one of those things we're going to have to say. This is something we're going to have to continue to think about, talk about. You expect that though we will have lawsuits involving Fourth Amendment issues regarding use of drones, and that's just only a matter of time.
I think that's right. I think as drones become a part of the U.S. airspace, they will engage in surveillance, and some people will question that surveillance, and the courts will ultimately have to decide how much privacy people will maintain in our increasingly digital world.
Our guest in this hour, Catherine Crump, she is a staff attorney with the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, with their Privacy and Technology Project. She's also a non-resident fellow at the Stanford Center for Internet and Society. If you'd like to read more on this issue, you can go to their website and look at this report that she co-authored, came out last December, Protecting Privacy from Aerial Surveillance, Recommendations for Government Use of Drone Aircraft. And Ms. Crump, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.